Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 25, episode 5 of Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
We're April 6, 2018. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. I'm Jackie. I'm feeling glad I got O'Brien in a bag. That's gorillas, baby. That one is courtesy of a.k.a. God Chapman Rice, and I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Because they like it, Miles Gray. Miles Gray. You can't satisfy their needs. They keep running back to listen to me, Miles Gray.
Anyway, that's an Usher one I just thought of right now. So, shout out to me. Ha ha! It's Friday, and I just drank so much cold brew, y'all. Get ready
for
just an hour of ranting. sweating.
You sound ready to go, man.
I am out of breath.
Woo! And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the hilarious writer and comedian, Teresa Lee.
What's up? It's me, Teresa Lee, the world's best mom with no kids.
Yeah!
Look at me, Teresa Lee!
How are you? How art thou?
I'm good. Yeah? I'm pretty good. I'm going to be going on tour pretty soon.
Yeah, that's exciting.
What city are you going to that you haven't been to that you're most excited to see?
Well, I don't know which one I'm more excited because I haven't been there yet, but the cities I'm going to that I've never been to, I'm going to Asheville, Richmond.
Oh, I've heard such good things about Asheville.
Yeah, there's a good comedy scene there. But the other cities I've already been to, so.
What city that you've been to are you most excited to go to?
I like Atlanta a lot. I've only been one Atlanta. Other
hey.
Place.
Hey.
It's going to be fun.
Shout out to HQ.
How Stuff Works.
HQ.
The mothership.
Yeah. You should go by there.
Shout out to everybody over there. Shout out to Jerry. Shout out Jason. Shout out Connell. Shout out the whole crew. Gang, gang. You're
gang,
in the building.
Gang. Teresa, what's something from your search history that is revealing about who you are as a human being?
Also, shout out Allison. Sorry.
What did I search? Oh, my God. I wrote this
also, shout out Nathan. Sorry.
Yeah, if you want me to give them a gift basket, I can do that.
All right, we'll freeze them out.
Down at HQ. What did I search? Oh, I recently searched, is Pitbull married?
Because you wanted to wait.
Well, no, I don't want to marry him. Right. Although it's we give him so much shit, and it's like he made some songs that have graced the rooms of the dance floors.
Oh, dale!
No, I just wanted to make a dumb joke about Mrs. Worldwide, but I also
oh, you want to be Mrs. 305?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then I was like, why he should be? Why? And then I was he's not. But
he's not.
He's single.
Well, it's not. The information's not there. It's not on his Wikipedia. So maybe he is, and he's very private and nice about it, but I couldn't find it.
Oh, yeah. Pitbull. Oh, he is married.
Oh, he is? Oh, yeah. Well, then I didn't Google further than the first search.
I mean, I just said Pitbull wife, and then there's many photos of him with Mrs. 305.
With Mrs. 305, yeah.
Dale.
I hope he proposed to her by asking her to be Mrs. Worldwide.
Probably. Yeah. Let's take this thing global.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He is 37. I would have guessed.
He's older.
I don't know. Either younger or older.
He seems like he is in a time warp, though. Like, he seems timeless, because, like, when you're already bald, then your face really only shows your age, and you're always wearing sunglasses. You can never see the wrinkles around your eyes.
Right.
So he's Mr. 305 years old, probably.
Exactly. Teresa, what's something that's underrated?
Google Trends. Do you guys know about this? You can just find just, like, data, but, like, it's fun. Maybe I'm the only one who likes looking. I used to go on OkCupid just to fill out the quizzes, and they also have like OkCupid labs, but I was like, I want to look at some graphs, and I found Google Trends, and I just went down this black hole.
Okay.
Of
up to you.
Well, I guess either. Well, either what's the difference? Works. They both work. Went down a hole of looking at
rabbit hole
data.
Even.
Yeah, right. Rabbit. Oh, there you go. They're all we should just combine all these words. They're all the same. But yeah, there's like a lot of interesting graphs and lists and things. They just put together based on the data and put it in an interesting way. You can see like where people search for symptoms of being sick, and then you can kind of like guess when something's going to come to you because you can watch
right.
the search
the wave
trends. Yeah,
come towards
it's
you.
Very interesting.
Oh, you can see it geographically?
Well, they put it. You have to wait till Google decides it's interesting because they put it out for you. But they will. There was a sickness one where you can see based on area what search terms are popular, and then they categorize it based on like symptoms. So you can be like, oh, the cold is going around here,
or leaky butt, or whatever it is.
Okay. Yeah, weird that you just called that one out.
Is that medical?
Out of the blue.
Well, that is.
Turns out I had trouble finding out
it's
about
a very,
leaky butt.
Very contagious symptom, leaky butt. So.
It's called anal leakage, apparently. So,
so do you just go to Google Trends?
Yeah, the Google Trends has graphs, and they put together stuff at the end of the year. So I really went down a hole
of any kind,
right?
A hole of your choice.
So I guess I went down a leaky butthole. That's
yeah.
Right.
Went down a leaky butthole.
Yeah, we do some Google Trend watches every once in a while here. It is really interesting to like see what's on people's minds. We now have a webpage that you can go to see like the entire country's unconscious or conscious or, you know, whatever we're thinking
about.
What
they want to know about.
Yeah.
Teresa, what's something that's overrated?
I think this might be a little old, but I recently saw Annihilation and people were raving about it and I was very excited, and then I thought it was overrated. I didn't like it. I try not to say that about movies, just I don't like it or I like it because it feels like too broad.
What was missing for you?
I didn't think it was that interesting. I think it felt, you could feel like they thought it was very smart. There were like lines in there where I was just like, really? Like at one point she just looks at a wall and is like, it's like mutating like a cancer. And you're like, oh, really?
Okay. Quite literally.
Is this the like motif that you keep hammering on the head throughout this entire movie? Okay, great. Mm. So it just felt like, but then it also felt like it was like, no, we're actually really smart and this is like really deep. And so then I was like, I don't like you.
Who do I trust?
The director actually comes out in the middle of the movie and is like, wait, so what you have to know about me is I'm super smart. It was the guy who made Ex Machina, right?
Yes.
Yeah, the director is, I think. So with movies, I constantly have this fear that, first of all, it's just based on like whatever my mood is at the time. Like if I'm like in a shitty mood. Like I went to see Die Hard with a vent, whatever the fourth, Live Free and Die Hard.
Live Free and Die Hard, yeah.
With my little sister and my best friend in the world. And we had
sounds
the
like
best
a kid's
time.
Book.
Yeah, no, it
with
was
my
like,
little sister and my best friend in the world.
We had such a good time. And I was like, man, I love that movie. And I came out and everyone was like, that movie sucks, man.
Right.
And I was like, oh, yeah.
Context,
yeah,
context.
It's okay to like a thing that other people don't like.
But... Right. But it was like, I do, then I watched it again. I was like, wow, this movie does suck. Mm. And I was just like in a good mood and had a good experience watching it the first time. And I'm also always worried that it's based on like my own weird like movie history. Like, I think that I can still watch Teen Wolf and think it's a good movie and it's not like clearly, but because it was like the first movie I saw, I feel like whatever my conception of cinema is for life is like a good movie should be shaped like Teen Wolf in some way, which is like not good.
Wow.
That's, right.
You should have a movie podcast.
That's like me and Zoolander. I used to love watching that with my sister, and it's like fine. It's funny, but it's for a long time. It's just like, I would say that's my favorite movie, and people are like, what?
Why? Yeah.
Zoolander, yeah. Just watching it over and over.
Yeah.
Well,
but then every time you watch it, yeah.
I feel like that with Orange County and Kingpin.
Oh.
Yeah, I watch Kingpin.
Love Orange County,
I love
man.
A lot of Kingpin though too. Yeah. Love Kingpin.
Teresa, what is a myth? We like to ask people what is something that people think is true that you know to be false.
Oh, this was recently. I was just talking with my sister about this, and then I happened to look at an article about it. There's something called the beginner's bubble. There's a lot of other studies, but there's one particular one I read in the Harvard Business Journal. I don't
Business
know.
Review?
Damn, look
Business
at you.
HBR?
It's not, I mean, it's not, it's just the basic idea is just that people, when they're starting out, there's a period of time, like, before you get good at something, when you are way overconfident about how good you are.
Right.
Because in the very beginning, you're very cautious, and then you start to sort of learn a little bit, like, the basic surface level. And then you start to be, you start to realize like, oh, I'm making progress. I kind of got the hang of it. And then there's this period of time where
reality sets in.
Well, no, but first you're just like, I got this because, you know, it's a matter
you feel
of time.
Good, right,
and you haven't made any mistakes yet or any big ones. So then you're like, well, I must be a genius at this. I'm better than everyone else, even though it takes other people longer.
Right.
And then you inevitably make a mistake and then. It takes a little, you get humbled and then it takes a while again. But it happens in like all industries, like in medical industry too. And it's like a thing with doctors, like new doctors, when they're starting out are very careful and then they start to get comfortable. And so the first few years, they're actually, I feel like if you want a good doctor, you can get a new doctor, like the first few years.
Very,
are very
first
careful,
few.
Or like very experienced.
Or the guy with like 80,000 hours.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
But the in-between is when you get people.
Where they're like, I got this, but they don't know.
Shit.
They haven't seen all the mistakes.
And they'll kind of fuck up a lot because they start to see patterns and they're like, oh, I know, like every time I see this, it's this. But then eventually there's one that's like, no, this symptom is actually this.
Right.
And you kind of got to get burned first.
I mean,
first,
it's sort of the Dunning-Kruger effect in the sense that it's like the wisest person in the world is like
the most insecure,
aware of how little they know.
Right.
Like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people who are just starting out have no idea. And I think, though, that that can sometimes be a good thing when it's not a medical professional who has your life in their hands.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Like, you know, golf is a lame sport, but I just have always remembered this example. My dad, like, has always tried to golf. He's not great at it.
Uh-huh.
And his best round ever was, like, the first time he went out golfing.
Right.
And it was just, like, he didn't really know, like, how hard it was. And so he just, like...
He's like, fuck you. Yeah. Smacked the shit out of his ball.
Well, you get it a lot in comedy, too, and, like, writing. Right. It's a lot of, like, you know, guys who've... I mean, and girls, too, but usually women are told early on that they're bad, so they get humbled. And there's a lot of men in stand-up comedy who have been doing it for, like, 5 months, and then they're like, I should be on Conan. And
you're
like, you don't even know. And
why don't I have an agent yet? Fuck, dude.
Yeah, well, I went to a networking event recently because, I don't know, my job is ending. I was like, I should do something. But
that's a very good plan.
And it was fine. It didn't get me anything, but it was interesting. But there were a lot of people there. It was mostly writers who... It hadn't done anything, but it was a lot of overconfidence and a lot of like, well, I've done like 2 drafts of my pilot, and the first one I got good feedback on, so why isn't anything happening? You're like, you gotta write like 10 drafts.
Right.
You don't even just.
And they're like, what's the show about? About this white guy who moves back home?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not even that they're. It's like a bunch of friends at a bar.
Right. And it's easy. It's like contained, man. It's like one set. I'm thinking ahead, man, because, you know, they're not going to fucking green light some shit that's like taking place over like different eras and shit.
But
just
I also think
out
it's
my different ideas for TV shows.
Well, it's also encouraging because I don't think, as annoying as sometimes those attitudes are, some of those people maybe do have some talent. It just means that they're in that in-between phase. So it just means like,
for sure.
Okay, once they get out of that bubble, they'll get success.
That's like anything. Like when I left politics to get into comedy in the beginning, I was like, yo, I'm fucking, I've been in the lab struggling, being like working in lobbying and politics and shit. And I always knew I wanted to do comedy. And then when I did it, that first 8 months, I was so motivated. I was like, yeah, look at this shit. And I look back and I'm like, ooh, boy, not all that shit was great. But I think when you also have like a good amount of enthusiasm too, that helps sort of create this environment. And then you sort of, after you sort of kind of take stock of where you are, where your work is, and compare it to the people that you really admire, like, oh, okay, maybe there's a little more development that needs to happen.
But it's necessary, because if you knew how shitty you were during that first couple of years, you would quit.
Yeah, exactly.
So
you
need that, like, sort of dumb confidence, I feel like.
Yeah. And we have plenty of that in the world right now.
Yes. And at this podcast.
Thank you. you looked right at me, though.
Yeah. I'm still looking at you. No,
this is actually your annual review.
Yeah, this is actually your exit interview.
I do feel like this town is very specifically runs on exactly what you're talking about.
This town is the beginner's bubble.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you think about the amount of people who move out here all the time. And like
literally everybody has a podcast and a screenplay.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And
that's interesting, because I was just thinking about that, how L.A. is such a weird ecosystem where everybody, there are all these other jobs that need to be filled, like, you know, regular service jobs and things to keep the economy running, but almost everybody's like an actor or someone trying to be something.
Well, it depends on what sort of circle you're in, right? Because, like, you're out here and you're doing comedy, and so your world is mostly comedy. Growing up here, like, a lot of my friends who are from here who are working now, they are, like, you know, nurses or doing other stuff, and also some work in the industry. Shout out to Brianna.
How selfish of them to.
But, yeah, but it's like, but it's funny because, like, whenever people meet actual Angelenos, they're like, whoa, and they're like, and you're not an actor? And I'm like, I'm a podcaster, get it right. But yeah, it's, you know, we're out here,
right?
But yeah, I think it all depends on sort of like, you're running in the world of comedy, so yeah, you're gonna see a lot of comedians or people who just are working tangentially in entertainment,
right? And, you know, the most average writer in Los Angeles was probably the best writer in their high school class or whatever. So that's also.
Were you the best writer in your high school class?
Oh, yeah, by far.
Oh, wow. No, some confidence.
I was not.
Okay.
I
wasn't even the best writer in my family.
Yeah.
Damn.
Wait, so you're a twin, right?
I am, yeah.
Is your sister that other good writer?
Oh yeah. I mean, she used to do musician, much better right? than me in school. I think now, like, she hasn't pursued writing, but she's a good writer. Mm. She used to just get straight A's and then would do the thing where when our report cards would come out, I would be like, "Oh, I got straight A's," and she'd be like, "Oh, you did? I got one A minus." I'm like, "Well, I was counting those." I don't know.
She's like, "Damn, okay, yeah. Well."
It was very passive aggressive, and she would pretend that it wasn't on purpose.
She's like, "Well, whatever works for you."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you guys are tight now?
Yeah, we're tight.
All right, guys. Let's get into the stories of the day. We're going to do another one of those episodes where we're just hitting a lot of stuff because there's a lot of stuff to catch up on.
That was Machine Gun.
And there's going to be a lot of just sound effects, too, throughout the show. But we want to start out with this Robert Mercer ad that we recently found out that it was a Robert Mercer ad. So,
yeah. So we all know Robert Mercer and the Mercers. They are basically very wealthy, I guess, hedge fund managers. He's a hedge fund dude.
Yes.
And he, you know, he puts a lot of money into very right wing causes. And, you know, he's up there with the Koch brothers as far as like boogeymen of the right who have much money and they do whatever they can to sort of shift the course of our history as a country. So we found out through Open Secrets, which is like an amazing website. If you're ever curious about how where money's going in politics, check out opensecrets.org. It is like the most used tool by anybody who wants to see where contributions are going or lobbyist money is going that is actually, you know, sort of verifiable. So they basically found out that this group called Secure America Now, which is a nonprofit group, was behind a lot of like super incendiary, inflammatory, fucking just overtly xenophobic, Islamophobic, anti-Muslim ads in the lead up to the 2016 election. They sort of portrayed countries like France and Germany and the United States that were like sort of like these travel ads. So the ad would be like, book your trip to the Islamic State of France. Book your trip to the Islamic State of Germany. And then let's just hear a little bit about the one that was played for America. So this is the ad from Secure America Now about the United States of America.
Welcome to the Islamic States of America. Weak leaders who have allowed unsecured borders and Syrian refugee immigration enabled our jihadi fighters to infiltrate and overtake America. Okay. The Islamic States of America
little on the nose. Sings I don't know the praises if they'd say
to Allah
that.
From sea to shining sea, reconstructing the American dream into what it always should have been.
Now hiring.
Yeah, there's been a lot of women.
Statue of Liberty. Radical Islamic culture has transformed everything. Walk down Hollywood Boulevard among our famous jihadi celebrities. Read about the latest fashion in Sharia law approved magazines. Visit our new cultural centers and celebrate our Islamic victories. As our caliphate continues to prosper, we raise our sons to practice jihad and our daughters under the protection of Sharia law.
And this is just all peppered with different poor photoshops of like the Statue of Liberty with a burqa on.
Yeah, so the imagery is insane. It's like refugees on boats. There are like Muslim people outside the White House. There's like, for some reason, like a segregated drinking fountain for gay and straight. Then there's like now hiring men only. And yeah, like the Hollywood sign is now reads Allahu Akbar and shit like that. So it's basically trying to scare the shit out of you for a very specific person with a very specific worldview that is based on total bullshit. This would scare you because Sharia law is like the buzzword for all these people. They're like, oh my God, whatever, Sharia law exists in these towns or whatever. Yeah, these are very sort of scary, fear-mongering ads. And so we come to find out that through a little digging, Open Secrets was able to find out where the money was coming from. So the way a lot of dark money groups work is people like the Mercers, and then on the left and the right, this is employed by both the left and the right, as I have dabbled in the dark arts of the 501c4 nonprofit before. So 501c4 is like a social welfare organization, and you usually have these very sort of nebulous names like Secure America Now or like Americans for Democracy, just things that you don't know like who the person is coming from.
I mean, that sounds totally harmless.
Right, exactly, because you don't know. And again, these groups don't have to disclose their donors to the public, but they do have to tell the IRS where the money is coming from. So basically when they were doing some digging, they basically got a tax return sort of thing from the group, and it was unredacted. Usually when they get it, it's fully like you don't know where the money is, but this one wasn't. And
just the IRS fucked up.
Yeah, or I think the accounting company that was the group's accounting firm just fucked up and was like, oh, here, like this is it. And you find out that the largest individual contribution was $2 million from Robert Mercer. Mm. So Yes, these ads were targeted very specifically in swing districts and very specific swing voters. We're seeing this through a tactic of using Google Ads and Facebook to get these sort of things in front of people. So, you know, good to know that, you know, America is always moving forward.
Yeah.
I feel like they could do that same ad with just what's happening now, like just not even make up like this is a fearful thing, just be like a documentary of like America now is like all the actual tragedy that's happening. And that's just as, I mean.
Yeah, well, but this is specifically kind of person whose their only fear are Muslim people and right. Sharia law.
So this was during the 2016 election, right?
Yeah, this is in the build up to it.
So, I mean, in the past, these sorts of ads become famous. Back when they ran on television, like at least the other side would see them and know, okay, this is what's being run to persuade people to vote for the person who I'm not going to vote for. But I didn't see this ad until, you know, a year and a half after the election.
Right.
And I mean, this goes back to that quote that with social media, it's like propaganda is broadcast into people's ear with a megaphone. Like people are shouting it into your ear, but nobody else can hear it.
Right.
Like,
yeah, because so, I had never seen these ads before.
I hadn't seen the ad, but I did hear people talk about, well, Sharia law is taking over. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
And they all, man? And like whether it's the one where there's like a German version, like, but it was all meant for Americans to digest, or the French version, it was sort of basically like, hey, we were too lax with immigration. ISIS came through, and now they've taken over our country. And the Eiffel Tower is just draped in an ISIS flag. Like you said, Statue of Liberty in a burqa. It's just wild shit. And then, like, all the kids in an American classroom, like, just pledging allegiance to the Islamic State. Right.
So it's less transparent in terms of anybody else knowing about it, but it's way more potent in terms of being able to exactly target who is going to be receptive to this. Because the Cambridge Analytica statistics and, you know, all the shit that they stole was focused around fear and like how perceptible you were to fear. And, you know, when Trump gave his RNC speech and he was like, the world is coming to an end, like our streets are bathed in the blood of white people as they're like,
people of color and gays run around freely.
Right.
Like, what?
And I was like, this just seems like this is going to be so poorly received by everybody, right? But because they were specifically targeting these people, and these people who were shown this ad lived in a different reality than me, he was speaking directly to them, and they were like, yeah, of course. Like, that sounded like the most natural thing in the world to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like what you were saying, Jack, about having these conversations where the other side can't hear it is a big thing. Like, because we use the internet now, so you can kind of go to websites that skew towards your viewpoint. And so you're not privy to the conversations that the other side is having. And especially now, I mean, I think it's great to take hate speech off the internet, obviously, but there's people who are creating, like, you know, secret or whatever, subreddits and things like that. So it's much harder to find out what those conversations are now and what the big ideas that they're thinking
about.
Well,
that's why luckily we have people like Jared Holt at Right Wing Watch who that's like their business to figure out what the fuck is always going on. But yeah, it's true. Like, especially with things like this where they're targeted ads, it would be hard to even come across this, even if you were looking like at things like Drudge or Breitbart or whatever.
Yeah.
Because these were basically meant to be like, hi, this is for a very specific person
right.
in a very specific region of the country.
Like, I started subscribing to different Breitbart mailing lists and stuff
like
that.
Oh, your fidget spinner came, by the way, in the mail.
Nice. But so I am starting to get, like, some of the things, and I, like, just started getting hit with ads that are like, they're trying to take away our Second Amendment rights and stuff like that. But I think Google and Facebook's algorithms are probably confused by me because I haven't, like, created a completely separate reality.
You gotta make a show. Account.
Yeah, exactly. I need to create a
I'm gonna be a divorced a dad.
What
if I do that and just make a bunch of friends and then I'm just
that just
and
becomes
they're like, hey,
you.
Come on the hunting
you know
trip with me, and I'm like, oh god, what are they gonna accept
and then
me
you
when
show
I
show up? They're like, what the hell, like, Craig?
It was me all along,
Teresa. This is a screenplay.
Yeah.
We'll talk offline.
Yeah.
Yeah, this sounds great. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're back.
We are.
And we were just talking about how
Teresa's script would work out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wrote it in the break.
Right. We have some third act problems, but we're working through them. And we were also talking about how there are people on the right who do create fake accounts, as we talked about during Hurricane Harvey, was it? yeah. Where there were these accounts, the Houston Loot Crew, where they were talking about, you know, how they were going to go looting, but it was clearly just some right-wing person who was trying to adopt the persona of a street tough.
Yeah.
That's like gaslighting to such an extreme level. Like, people do that in relationships, and where they will be like, you're crazy for thinking this, because if I, you know, I don't know, like, if you've ever, whatever, been in a shitty relationship, sometimes it'll be like, you suspect them of doing something insane, like creating fake accounts or, you know, doing such mind games, and then you accuse them, and then the guy's like, if I did this, I'd be crazy. And you're like, you're right. But then you find out, you are crazy. Like,
that's
if
crazy.
The right side did this, they'd be crazy. Yeah. Oh, right. No, but they did it. They are crazy.
And
they
those are mentally posts, abusing of everyone. Course, went viral. And then when podcasts like ours debunk them, of course, those people are not listening to them. So there's probably many, many people who are still worried about the Houston Loot Crew. But let's get into some other reasons to be terrified. So we have this North Korea meeting in the offing, and on one of the Crooked Media podcasts this week with Tommy Vitor, Pod Save the World, he interviewed Robin Wright from The New Yorker, and she just wrote an article about America's history with diplomacy and how there are like sort of these two camps, these two approaches to diplomacy. And it's almost like every time somebody tries to approach a diplomatic encounter via personality, it goes really badly. Kennedy, when he first met with Khrushchev, thought he was just going to be able to charm Khrushchev and, like, you know, just be fucking John F. Kennedy.
Yeah, you're not selling carpet, my man.
Rock star, you know, right. and Khrushchev just, like, fucking owned him by right. the end of it. The same thing happened with Reagan when he met with Gorbachev. He was like, we seem to see things the same way, but they had no success in Reykjavik when they met for the first time. But then Nixon and Kissinger went to China and they did all the research. They just, like, you know, had this exhaustive preparation and, you know, just were aware of every, like, little facet of Chinese culture and how, you know, what they would want to hear from them and, you know, just did all the prep. Yeah. And they had huge success where, like, they went into those meetings where the future seemed like one thing between America and China and came out and it was like a totally different thing. And right. it was like way more in
crazy
line
fact
with,
during yeah. World War II, my grandfather in Japan, he was like one of the foremost experts on German philosophy.
Oh, really?
And he was recruited by the Japanese government to understand how the Germans uh-huh. were going to be communicating and like what they mean.
Yeah.
So like,
that's
yeah.
That's the sort of shit you need yeah. to
right,
do.
Right, exactly. Because they were like, yo, we're in Japan. It's like the late 30s. We don't really know many German people, yeah. but I think this guy does. Right. What are they fucking saying? And right. yeah, because it's very important when culturally people go into negotiations very differently or have a very different mindset of how they're negotiating or right. even how they see how they're going to achieve their aims. So yeah.
Right. Well, like Kennedy and Reagan are both sort of more traditionally handsome, charming guys.
Right.
So they probably went through their lives getting things handed to them or it right. was easy for them to persuade people. So they never had to think about working hard. And then for Nixon, who literally lost the first time because he was ugly.
right.
Too ugly
just,
for
like,
TV, just sweating.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
he knows he has to like.
Kissinger was
a
dreamboat, though.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I mean, that kind of fucks up your argument.
Yeah.
Kissinger now,
Kissinger,
especially.
Especially, yeah.
So fucking
yumma, yumma, yumma.
Yumma, yumma, yumma. But so there's just this great anecdote that I want you guys to listen to that she reported in this podcast about how we can expect Trump to approach the negotiations because. You know, The Art of the Deal had just come out in the late 80s, early 90s, and he was actually lobbying to be in charge of negotiating with the Soviet Union about disarmament and nuclear weapons. And so he obviously did not get that job. And everybody laughed behind his back about the fact that he thought he was, you know, Mr. Deals and could do a good job. But anyways, so the story is that Trump and the guy who actually got the job and who ended up doing like all this preparation, all this work to actually, you know, succeed in disarmament and, you know, making progress in that direction. They met each other at a wedding and Trump came up to him and told him how he was going to handle it if he had gotten the job.
Donald Trump and Richard Burt happened to meet each other at a society wedding in New York. And Trump walked up to him, according to Burt, and said, "So you're the guy," meaning you were the one who got the appointment. And Richard knew the story of Trump's lobbying. And he said, yes, I am. And Trump said to him, well, let me tell you what I would have done if I'd been appointed the envoy to the Soviets. I would have gotten them into the conference room. I would have made sure they were comfortable, very comfortable. And then I would have stood up and shouted, fuck you, and walked out of the room.
The end.
Oh, shit. Wow. What?
That's... And you know it's true because of the, and I would have made sure they were comfortable, very comfortable.
Very comfortable.
It's like that is word for word what happened in that conversation.
That's how he won the election. He got all his fans comfortable,
right.
And then he got in the White House and went, fuck you!
Exactly.
Yo, fuck you diplomacy, man. That's dope. Hey, that's cool, though. You know what I mean? That's like some, that's baller.
Yeah,
but
straight baller.
It's not. It does not work when the fate of, I don't know, most of the human world depends on it.
But there's nothing to indicate that he is going to do anything other than that in this North Korea discussion. But, you know, here's hoping
dude,
that
would be
he
dope
actually does
if
do
they
homework.
Just laughed at him. Right. They're like, all right, bro. We already knew that, though. We already listened to Pod Save the World. We knew this was coming.
So
also, that woman kind of sounded like Elizabeth Warren. Did you know that?
Did a little bit, like a much flatter Elizabeth
Warren.
Yeah, Elizabeth Warren.
The
is
timbre
really,
was there. It was like, they're, you know, look.
Elizabeth Warren is.
I digress.
Very animated when she comes on those shows.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. People are finally asking the White House whether Trump is influenced by Fox News because he clearly is. Somebody did a chart where they basically charted his tweets throughout a 24-hour period and then, you know, showed the period of time that Fox and Friends is on, and you can see that there's just an incredible, you know, uptick in the likelihood that he's going to tweet during the hours that Fox and Friends are on. So it's obvious he is determining what he's going to think and talk about and dictate policy on a given day based on what happens on Fox and Friends.
God damn it.
And
why can't he listen to our show?
Right.
Swap out the tape.
Yeah, exactly. Or you know what you do? Make you do this. You play our episodes. You dub an episode of Fox and Friends, but you just your daily zeitgeist underneath it. Problem solved, y'all. We saved the world.
When CNN asked about this, Sarah Sanders was like, "I'm sure you're disappointed that he's not watching CNN," but and then just like Jesus. You know, said some other bullshit that
and then turned
didn't
to a bat
the question.
And flew away.
But there was a Washington Post story about this that pointed out that White House aides have turned to actually booking guests on Fox to say things to the president if they can't. Get an in-person meeting because they know he will listen more when it is said by somebody on TV.
Uh-huh.
That is happening.
Okay, great.
Wow.
I know they say, like, what, Jeanine Pirro apparently was, like, the most effective one?
Yeah.
They're like, he really fuck with Judge Jeanine right. Pirro. Like,
yeah.
Tiffany Trump has to go on Fox and Friends and be like, hey, Dad.
I'm your daughter.
It's almost my birthday. Yeah. And, what do you think?
Who the fuck is this freak? Who's this terrorist? Get her off the screen. But yeah, Justice with Judge Jeanine, like, can really, really catch his attention, apparently. Like, so I guess between all of them, you can have a pretty good attack on his brain to, you know, get the, I don't know. I mean, do they think it's working, though? Because he seems increasingly less and less.
Well, but they can,
attached to reality.
It's not like the White House aides are in charge of the programming. They can just sometimes get people booked. But, you know, Fox and Friends is determining that they're going to show this caravan. And if they show a particularly, like, worrying piece of news, he's going to, you know, freak out. And that will be the thing that he focuses on for those 24 hours. So it might work, but it's not a very straightforward way of presidenting. Somebody... A guy named Richard Jeter, who used to write on At Midnight, tweeted something to the effect that people talk about Fox being state-controlled media, but we have a media-controlled state. And that is really true. Ooh. And, you know, there has been state-controlled media in the past. I don't think there's ever been a media-controlled state, like a state that is just being determined by somebody who just, it depends on whatever the fuck they watch on TV. Maybe there is. I don't know.
Didn't George W. Bush watch some play that actually helped influence him to declare war. I forget the name of the play, but it was
Phantom of the Opera.
Yes, that was the Hamilton. Obviously, all these things for most politicians, it's not just one thing. It's more like I don't know. There's a metaphor that I'm trying to get at that I can't think of. You know, the thing that lights the fuse. The cartoon with the Wile E. Coyote.
There's never been such transparent, like, one-to-one situations where it's like, this was on Fox, and now that's what he's thinking and talking about. So, shit, man.
Jeff Bezos, stop fucking around. Buy fucking News Corp.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Just buy Twitter and just shut it down.
Just to save the world, bro. Flex your fucking big bank account. And help us, bro.
So you also had something you wanted to talk about.
I mean, everything is so messy in that fucking place right now. And it's great from a soap opera standpoint. It's fucking terrifying from an existential standpoint.
Right.
But let's get into it in the section I call When It All Falls Down. Now that basically the child managed daycare center that is the White House is completely devoid of reasonable human beings, Trump has got all kinds of really cool ideas. So the latest one this week that has most people worrying, especially his military appointees and people at the Pentagon, is that he just wants to get the fuck out of Syria right away because he just feels like it's a waste of money, it's not doing shit, and, you know, fuck it, we shouldn't be there. Everyone was like, no, that's actually a terrible plan because, like, remember the last time we pulled out of a country too early? That created a power vacuum, created ISIS, and you remember that? And they're also being like, you know, it will also create a vacuum that will be filled by Russia and Iran. And we're, like, and America's more and more out of the picture in terms of diplomacy and figuring out what the fuck to do in Syria. So the experts are like, no, and he's still fixated on, like, getting out. He doesn't even want a timeline. He just wants it done. And it's just crazy. I don't know why, you know, that's just sort of his main thing right now.
I'm just throwing this out there, but if Putin could request a single piece of, you know, strategy on the part of the U.S. in Syria, wouldn't that be exactly what it
is? Right, because he's like, because your toys are fighting my toys there. So take your toys out, then mine can just roll the whole fucking country up.
I don't know.
Along with Turkey and Iran, because they had a real cool unity meeting this week where it was like a panic attack in a photo. But anyway, moving on, the next thing, just to sort of show how his brain is sort of like, he just thinks everything is a movie. He was shown by the CIA some footage of a drone strike on a target in the Middle East somewhere. And in the video that was shown to him, the target was leaving his home and traveled some distance to create some space between himself and the home he left. And then the attack was initiated. And then after he saw it, the first thing he asked them was, why did you wait? Because he just thought, why don't you just blow up the whole fucking house? And they said, well, because there were innocent bystanders in there and we didn't want civilian casualties. And he was like, why? And again, he's been saying this since the beginning. Like, he's always like, you got to kill their families and shit. He said that on the campaign trail. So he definitely still thinks like it's like a Dirty Harry movie or something.
It's like a video game for him. He's just like, oh, yeah, those aren't people.
Right, exactly. And I mean, I don't know if he's played the Death from Above level in Call of Duty, but that might have affected his sort of perception of how
that
goes.
It's just boring, all that waiting around, I'm sure. Yeah. You know, he likes his TV shows, bang, bang, bang.
Boom, boom, boom.
I'm pretty sure he fast forwards to the fight scenes in movies. I think we heard that somewhere.
Right. So again, it's a very disconcerting, especially when you pair that all with his fuck you style of diplomacy. Yeah, he clearly has no consideration for civilian casualties, which is probably why he doesn't mind such an aggressive stance with North Korea, because I guess it's so abstract to him. He's like, I don't know any Korean people. So
yeah, he said that also, like, with China, he's like starting the he wants to do the tariffs, and he said something like, oh, well, there might be pain, but we'll win from that. And you're like,
yeah,
but your decisions will actually affect people. Like, you can't just be like, oh, suffer through the pain, because it's like,
well, the crazy thing too is like, it will disproportionately affect a lot of the states that voted for him.
Yeah,
so that's just a fucking weird move also, because he has his ego, but he can't reconcile that with like how shit actually works and what those effects are. He's just so impulsive. So yes, we're in good hands.
It was a Sunday Times article that recalled an occasion in the 90s when Trump wanted to watch the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie Bloodsport. But it was 92 minutes, which is too long for his attention span. And so he made his son fast forward through all the exposition and dialogue until it was just 45 minutes of just people getting the shit kicked out of them.
Holy shit.
So that, and that's how, that, and, it sounds like that's how he likes his
He only likes the sexy
CIA
parts.
Videos.
Yeah. The same thing, he eats his pizza, just the toppings. So he only likes the good part.
That is so gross.
That part.
He just, that part.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we are going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with a bunch of shit that doesn't involve the Trump White House. And we're back. And we wanted to bring on super producer Anna Hosnier because it seems like a lot of stuff is happening in the world of TV, and Miles and I are too busy taking care of children to be caught up on our TV.
I'm taking care of not even my own kids.
Right.
Taking up for all these children out here.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Anna.
Hi, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm great.
Your energy is so high right now, I cannot imagine what you did this morning or last night.
We'll get to what I did. It involves a little yodeling boy.
Yeah. Oh, yes. We will get to that.
But so, first of all, there was a Jersey Shore reunion that you did not watch.
No, I didn't.
Super producer Sophie talked about.
Yes.
Apparently, the situation has been sober for a while.
Which, can I say, boo!
Boo! No.
Damn. this man's trying to get his life together.
I know.
But also, no, boo.
Isn't he like, how old is he now?
76.
Well, he looks great. No.
No, but good for him. He's, you know, trying to get his life together.
Yeah, of course, man. Come on.
He's
now.
Trying to bounce
Tough
back.
Challenge. I feel like that would be the hardest place to try to get sober in the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is on the Jersey Shore.
That is a true test.
But right. They're family.
Right.
So.
Do they, oh, yeah.
That's the Olive Garden.
I mean, I'm going to have to get into it because as some of y'all who listen know, we fuck with the Jersey Shore in here because I'm pretty sure the tweet that you did that went viral of us holding the banner of the note,
yeah, you have the note
spawned so much secondary content of other people getting the people from the Jersey Shore to talk about the note.
Yeah.
And so, you know what? We're making culture here, guys.
Right.
That's true.
We do. The only piece of art on our wall is a giant house-sized
the anonymous
rendering
note.
Of the anonymous note.
From Snooki to Sam.
But Miles, you were saying you have a friend who works in reality TV on the original Jersey
Shore.
The homegirl.
A friend of a friend.
An anonymous source.
Anonymous friend who, worked on the first couple seasons and said that the Jersey Shore was by far like such a different kind of reality show to produce. Like typically with things like Real World, you'd have to kind of like spur on like some sort of narrative and things like that. Whereas they just sort of sat in the control van and they were just like, we're out of booze. We need more booze. And they would come in there and they would just wild out and they're like, we're going to Karma. And they would just go and they didn't have to do shit because these people are so legitimately these people that there was really not much engineering that had to be done. Now, I don't know if that's the same for the later seasons, but initially the thing that captured everyone was unadulterated, pure Jersey Shore
like the
energy.
The cast is just waking up the camera crew in the middle of the night. Hey guys, get this. It's gotta be good.
You're missing some good shit.
Pauly D's gonna boof a whole fifth of vodka.
apparently they're still in that form because Snooki has children now, but got after it and
Jay Whitehouse kids.
Had to pee and just jumped in a pool last night fully clothed and took a pee.
Yeah.
So they are the the goats when it comes to reality TV casts.
Reality They're debauchery, just, yes.
They are the greatest that has ever lived. But so Atlanta is having a great season and had a great episode last night that I did not have a chance to watch. But Anna, you watched it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what happens.
It was wild. Apparently they aired it with absolutely no commercial breaks. So it was like 41 minutes. And it was this like surrealist world where Darius, Lakeith Stanfield, goes to pick up a piano that he saw for free online at this mansion in the middle of nowhere in Georgia. I don't know how far out of Atlanta. And the person he encounters is a Michael Jackson figure. It's a man who's clearly bleached his skin, had a lot of work done, who is dealing with a lot of stuff. And it's so creepy and it's got like Get Out vibes. And it is surreal and it is like layers of horror going on. You don't know where it's going to go. And it's just wild. I feel like it also comments a lot on just like celebrity upbringing, like parents like abusing their kids to make them famous and make them stay in line and just do everything they can to be a celebrity. And it's very intense.
Like
and
Michael
I also,
Jackson.
Yeah, like Michael Jackson specifically, like Joe Jackson has admitted to beating him because he said it made him a better performer in person and kept him in line, which is there's levels to that.
Yeah, no, that's how it works.
But it's also very interesting because now you can see that like Donald Glover like has the power at FX. And that's like really cool to see that he's like, here's what's going to go down.
Yeah. Right, right,
right.
He just
made an episode.
We're gonna do.
Yeah, and so that's kind of cool to see an African-American man be like, and it'll also have no commercials and will air like 40 minutes and it will just be so, like anything can happen, which that's the greatest part of Atlanta. It's just so out there. And I
didn't see
it.
That episode, but did you like it? You liked it?
I loved it.
Oh, so it was surreal in a great way though,
yeah.
Too, for you.
Like I was like talking to myself through all of it, like, oh my God, what did he do?
And the whole skin bleaching thing is something that is actively happening like
yes.
right now. Like if you Google Sammy
no,
Sosa,
no.
I wouldn't recommend
well, don't
it.
Bring up in, Sammy Sosa,
okay,
poor Sammy.
But in the show, Darius calls Donald Glover and Paperboy and he tells them to Google Sammy Sosa.
Does he really?
Because they're like, what are you talking about? He's like, no, Google Sammy
yeah,
Sosa
Sammy
to understand
Sosa,
what I'm
yeah.
dealing with right now.
Yo, it's crazy the bleaching yeah. he did.
It's pretty
I
crazy.
I cannot believe he went from Dominican to Dominic from up the street. So also you say Roseanne is fire?
Yes.
This is you the first person, although I don't watch
this
it.
This is a brave take.
And I'm only
like
reading
it.
Hot, angry takes
brave.
From like people on Twitter, but
look, I grew up with my Persian ass family watching Roseanne. I have been a Roseanne fan. I mean, not the person that is Roseanne Barr. I don't care about her. The show Roseanne itself has always spoken to me. I'm sorry to say
yeah.
it, but Persian people, we spend our whole lives watching like perfect people on television. It's funny to us to just see a normal kind of like quote unquote trashy, which I don't think they're trashy. They're just, you know, people from the Midwest, family, just doing what they do.
Yeah.
And I love it. And I got to say, Laurie Metcalf is an amazing actor. Every scene she's in, I was dying. She's so good. And to just bring like this Oscar-nominated actress and just put her in this role she used to have, it's amazing. She kills it. She knows what she's doing. And it's not all Trump propaganda. I mean, yes, Roseanne Barr, extremely problematic. But it's not just about her. The entire show is carried by all these characters that are pretty funny. Like John Goodman, still got it, baby.
And when you
still
got it. In one episode, how many times do you go like this? Because it's problematic. How many inhale
not
through
that
the teeth?
Not much.
Hmm.
I mean, the jokes are more like dumb than anything.
Right.
Because every time Roseanne says something that's like right wingy, like she has all the other characters in the house being like, oh, shut up. Like everyone's aware that she's just like this
yeah.
like out of touch old lady.
And also in terms of reflections of reality, like people have conservative relatives. People have conservative heads of households and like, yeah. That's what, like, immigrant parents are also, you know, tend to be very conservative.
Very conservative.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so it's only because Roseanne is a Trump supporter that it has that conservative character. I think it's a reflection of reality in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
But you were also saying that her theories on QAnon make a lot of sense.
Right.
Right. And I have also asked QAnon to DM
To DM you, yeah.
No, but I think it's interesting. Laurie Metcalf's character, Jackie, actually wears a Nasty Woman shirt just to bother Roseanne.
Right.
Like, it's her whole thing. She wears a, you know, the pink pussy hat, which we, you know, let's not get into how problematic that is. But I think it's an interesting that she's also this kind of weird white feminist vibe where you get it from her too.
Right.
So like they all have their sides, but it's just
right.
they're people. They're people we see every day.
Right. They're taking
lives.
The piss out of white
yeah.
feminists
and, there's a,
and
oh, it's
Trump
a piss
supporters.
Type then.
It's yeah.
A piss
and there's
type.
A
all
boy,
right,
Darlene's son likes to dress like a girl and they deal a lot with if he's going to get bullied or not. So it's
right.
like real things that these like conservative grandparents have to be like, I don't know how to deal with this. So I'm going to do my best. Here's a knife to protect yourself because I've never dealt like with this before. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just an old conservative man.
Right.
And, oh, Jesus.
I come from an era when
please
a feller threatened you, you stabbed him.
Yeah. Right. And so it's like this funny connection of people trying to be like, oh, like Darlene being like, Dad, geez, just don't get involved in this. And it's interesting. And I, you know what? Gives me a few belly laughs here and there.
All right.
All right.
I'm sure like the writers and there's people behind it that are all pretty liberal and not at all.
Well, yeah, the entire
I mean,
writers.
Roseanne
yeah. So,
is...
I mean, they probably are doing what they can to make it more representative. And...
Roseanne's the real problem.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think,
else...
yeah, right. I think probably the main issue people take is that someone with a show this popular right now has these crazy theories about
yeah.
governance and how the world is working that yeah. maybe that's the knock-on effect of like this show. But,
yeah. But the nostalgia is so strong that I can't help but enjoy
see,
it.
See, I'm going to
okay?
have to watch it because I have no connection to Roseanne. So
you might not like it.
No, I know. But I mean, I don't know if I'll like it or not like it, but I think I'll have a different, I don't know. Fuck yeah. it. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to get fucking, I'm going to get melted.
Three episodes
and I'm gonna watch
out
it.
Right now. You can find it on Hulu.
I can't afford Hulu, but somebody DM me with their pass, and I will shout you out on the podcast.
I can give you my password.
Well, hold on, Zach. Hold on. I want the Zach gang to come to
me. I make $300K a year here.
So we are running low on time, so we only have time for a two-story Bloid Watch. So, Miles.
Yeah.
It sounds like, I mean, this time, according to the cover stories, Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt are definitely getting together.
They are
right?
moving in. It's a cover
story.
It says
they're moving in together.
They are moving
How
together.
How can they bullshit that
yes,
story?
Yes, that's what I said. So you look inside. It says Jen is finally moving in. Then you open up the magazine to read what the facts are. And the facts are that according to some sources, she's talked about moving in with Brad Pitt. So again, wild speculation. My new favorite show, Wildly Speculating.
According to anonymous sources,
according to anonymous sources, she has talked about moving in. So yeah, that's that. The next story that we also saw that Teresa read was about, it said like, Diva Adele, a waiter's worst nightmare. So what the fuck are they trying to say about Adele in this magazine?
This is kind of a silly story because it's basically saying that she goes to these restaurants and then asks for a lot of things because she doesn't want people to see her eat. So at first it's like, Adele asks for a lot when she goes to, you know, the same restaurants we all go to, Soho House and Nobu.
Right, yeah. Nobu. I don't go there. I don't have money for Nobu.
Right. Yeah. So already it's very unrelatable. But then they're like, she makes people move the table and she's never happy. But then there's like an afterthought, which is like, that goes, you know, she might just be looking for privacy. She doesn't like people watching her eat. So then first they're like, she's a bitch. And then they're like, but also maybe she just doesn't want to be bothered.
But also, I get it,
eats.
Man. Like, she's very well known, and you don't want people gawking at you while eating. All right.
Mm. But, yeah.
Well, again, great. That caught my eye.
But I just have to quickly say that while I was reading that story, I saw that Justin is now dating a new model very
Justin
shortly,
Bieber,
after the breakup with Selena, which was supposed to just be a break.
Selena?
And this girl is named Baskin.
Robbins.
That's her name. No, Champions.
Baskin? Wait, what?
Baskin Champions? Yeah. That
that's
name is fucking
fake. No, that's fake.
Her name.
That's a Russian bot.
So anyways, I'm very disappointed in that relationship.
That is a freshman creative writing class name.
Yeah.
Baskin Champions walked into the room.
Watch
hotly.
Me bask in champions.
All right. Now, we want to move on and go out in the world of music. Of course, the Cardi B album is out today.
For sure. We all know.
We have not had a chance to listen to that yet.
All of it,
because
we
have been too busy listening to what I think is your finest work in a while, the internet. So it's three compounding works of genius. So some young genius from The Holler was on YouTube just yodeling it up in a Walmart.
Yeah, so
and
he's killing
he
it.
He is fucking dope.
Young man in boots, huge-ass belt buckle, red bow tie, and there's like an old woman who's just having her heart melted as she watches this man yodel. So first, this is the original video of the young boy yodeling in the Walmart. Peep these yodeling skills. So, yes.
Yeah.
Suffice to say, this young man is killing this Hank Williams tune, and his yodel game is on about 3,000.
Right. Panties are soaked.
Panties are soaked. The woman who next to him, the janitor from Walmart had to come through with a mop. Anyway, so now cut to the internet doing what the fuck it does when something goes viral, right? So that's the genesis point. Then we get the fire fucking EDM remix of the Yodel Boy, who we have not stopped playing this song in the office.
This song is so fucking good.
So just drop the beat, Nick.
All I do is fly,
go.
Woo! Oh, yeah.
We are fucking dancing right now. Y'all can't see, but this is woo.
Miles just jumped into the pool.
I just put it in a full split. Now, so this EDM remix, everybody is loving. Now, phase three. I don't know how many of y'all follow Daquan on Instagram. If you don't follow Daquan on Instagram, get your fucking life together, because that's really the only meme account you really need to be following. So then I think it was last night. I think Anna and I both probably saw this last night because our significant others were so annoyed that we just kept playing this like 15-second Instagram video on a loop where it's just called, like, I think it was something where it says, like, when you hear the EDM remix of the Yodeling Boy. It's hard to explain. So I guess we'll have to link that in the footnotes. But it's, I don't even want to explain it. You just have to watch this evolution. I guess we'll tweet it out from the account.
The song starts playing and somebody just matter-of-factly, like very business-like, just jumps off of a balcony and like begins falling like what would be to their death.
Yeah, like 8 stories.
Like 8 stories. And then it like smash cuts to this person like dropping into splits. It's just
doing a dance hall death drop, split drop, and just smashing the ground with his booty. And in here, I definitely tried to force myself into split, and I may have torn my hamstring.
Now Miles has been limping all morning.
Yes,
but totally worth it. But you do kind of have to see it. So
we'll link all that stuff.
Look in the footnotes or just footnotes. Start following Daquan on Instagram. And that is what's going on in the zeitgeist today, guys. Teresa, as always, it has been such a pleasure having you. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Larissa T, LeResatee. And I'm going on tour. So if you, want to see me, go on my Twitter. You can.
Yo, come on. You got to sell it better
than that. Yeah. Oh, it's going to be great. I'm going to be in Atlanta, Boston, New York, a bunch of other places, San Francisco. Go to my Twitter and you can find my dates and ticket stuff there.
Do it. I highly recommend you do that. Miles, where can people find you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. But you already know that. And also, please, guys, follow me. You know what I mean? I'm trying to get my followers up so I can become an influencer and get free socks.
Especially on Instagram.
Yeah.
And you can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. Follow me too.
Yeah.
If Miles is going to get his numbers up, I still need to get my numbers up.
Nah, your numbers are fine. You don't have a finite number. Like, I have like 4,000 something something. You got like the 23.4K thing.
Yeah, but I
got
to keep that difference the same.
Yeah, that's
true.
Yeah. Let them know.
It's important to our dynamic. All right. Anna Hosnier, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Anna Hosnier, AnnaHosnieh. And you can listen to my podcast, Ethnically Ambiguous, on the How Stuff Works Network. Great times.
It is a great show.
I'm just joking.
I know.
Hit him with that. That yodel.
That's going to do it for today and this week. Another season in the books. Miles, what are we going to ride out on?
Shout out to, I don't know how to say your Twitter avatar, at Angel Juan A. I don't know. Or it's John A. Or it's Ellipsis Comfortable. But you stroked my ego and said you like the music. And I said, what genre you want to hear today? You said G-Funk. So get ready. Today, this is for all the old heads out there, but if you don't know, G-Funk is like West Coast rap that's like wrapped in like a lot of like Parliament sort of influenced samples and sort of production style. Now, the track I'm gonna play is Rodney O and Joe Cooley called You Don't Hear Me Though. And that's just like, if you grew up in LA, at the West Coast, we all know this song. It's like our national anthem. And if you don't know, now you know, and you can listen to the same music that an old washed hip hop head would listen to. So enjoy that and enjoy your weekends, guys.
All right, that's going to do it for this season. We will be back next week. Talk to you guys then. Bye.
But you don't hear me though. Look who's hanging out with the Falcons. Just because you're on top of a mountain. But what goes up must come down, bro. They didn't care about you 4 years ago. So what you gonna do when it's all sinking? Get engaged to the pipe and start drinking. I don't know, but I'll never be someone's friend. Just because a fool's making dead presidents. Rodney O and Joe Cooley don't play that. And you know we never come off whack. I'm only down with my homies from the get-go. I ain't down with OPP and a sideshow. If you don't like it, then I'm throwing up my finger. Rodney O's keeping one in the chamber. Who you fooling? Damn sure not Rodney O. Back to the hook, fool, but you don't hear me though. Some dope stuff from Joe. Why don't you sit back? Yo, Bob, put the table. So what up, fellas? Yeah, I got the funky jam coming.
up on your blind side. Oh yeah, here I am. I'm not down with that R&B, it makes me sick. Singing and grinding, trying to add a rap on that little bit. You know what I'm talking about, that stuff's not real rap. They try to add a hip-hop flavor and it's still whack. Rodney, yo, Joe Cooley got the gangster track. Coming on strong, we're not giving no slack. Kicking street lyrics cause I know it would stick. I got the hoochie mamas, yeah, they jumping on it. Sit back, rap lovers and smile. The music's about to be your entertainment for a while. You love it, you like it, it's a straight up rap show. And to your R&B fans, you don't hear me though. For me to kick another fly funky verse, and if I die, put a sound system in my hearse. You don't hear me though, it's a title, bro. I'm calling money when I slam down my domino. Fever in the funk house, yeah. And if you play, then you know what I'm talking about. Who you fooling when you say that you can fake the O? I got a New York critic in a chokehold. He just my record cause he didn't like my vocals. Now I'm showing him the meaning of loco. I'm not friends with my peers, so I'm overlooked. I got the P-Funk fool on the funky hook. I'm paying suckers back for all the years of dissing me. But now I'm rolling and there ain't no stopping me. Rodney Yo and Joe down with the psycho. Back to the hook, fool, but you don't hear me though. The place where the hardcore is happening. Now that's the way it is, so that's the way we're rapping. Some New Yorkers don't know where we're coming from, and one half the nerd to try to miss Compton. I take it personal when you diss my hood, son. Now you got me wanna break you off some. Yeah. Now you got me wanna break you off some. Yeah. Now you got me wanna break you off some. Chuck Cooley is. Rodney O is. This jam is. But you don't hear me though. But you don't hear me though.